This is Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
Hey, and welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
It's a glorious day here today, and a very fun topic, if I do say so myself. This is a topic that we could literally ramble on and on, giving points and tips for, I think, multiple shows. We're going to try to condense this down into one quick and easy show. Today we're going to talk about whether or not chronic stress can cause hypothyroid symptoms.
Yes, so if you have been diagnosed with hypothyroidism, if you think you might have hypothyroidism, or if you are dealing with stress, which is fairly common. This is a really important show.
Yeah. So in our clinic, we see a lot of people that have lots of stress. And one of the first things that comes up is people will say, well, I'm stressed. I have, I think I have adrenal fatigue. Now, we've already done a show on adrenal fatigue, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about adrenals and the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, gonad, thyroid axis, right? A lot of people, that's HPTAG is really what the axis is. But a lot of people have heard about the HPA axis, the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis. Well, you have to include the thyroid and the gonads in there because that's all in there together. And like I said, we're not going to get into that, other than I'm just going to talk about the fact that a lot of you out there who have complained to maybe your doctor about, fatigue and thinking that you have adrenal fatigue, your doctor will look at you and say, well, that's really not true. There's no such thing as adrenal fatigue. And I get why they say that. They're saying that because they're operating on a different paradigm. They're operating on the premise that either your adrenal glands are perfectly healthy or they're diseased with something like Addison's disease or Cushing's disease. They're not operating on the idea that you can have optimal adrenal gland function and suboptimal adrenal gland function and then have disease state. They're saying that if your lab values for your adrenal glands are within normal range, as big as that normal range is, that you're perfectly healthy. And we know that's not true. We've done an entire show on that, talking about how that's not true. Remember that stress plays a role on this hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, thyroid, gonad axis. It just does, right? So then that leads us back to our question here of how does chronic stress cause hypothyroid symptoms? Well, there's a whole host of ways that chronic stress can cause hypothyroid symptoms, right? I mean, we know that the thyroid gland is intimately connected to the HPA axis. And I'm saying HPA axis because it's what most people know it as, the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal. But we have to include the thyroid and the gonads in there. They all work together, right? So what happens with stress is stress depresses HPA axis function, right? The chronic stress causes our body to release inflammatory cytokines, and cytokines are these little chemicals that help our cells communicate with each other, right? They're little proteins that interfere with the HPA axis, and they reduce the function of our hypothalamus and pituitary, two things in our brain, right? And then the hypothalamus and pituitary, they're what's responsible for our body making this stuff called thyrotropin-releasing hormone, or TRH. And then that goes, and we also make thyroid releasing hormone thyroxine stimulating hormone, TSH. And anyone who's, questioned their thyroid function to their doctor or whatever has had a TSH lab value ran on them. So that's what we're talking about. It's from the pituitary gland, and it tells the thyroid what to do. And so in a healthy person, the thyroid-releasing hormone and thyroid-stimulating hormone, they go to the thyroid, and they stimulate our thyroid to make thyroid hormone, T4 and T3, thyroxine and triiodothyronine, so T4 and T3. So when the HPA axis is suppressed or slowed down, the TRH and TSH levels go down. And so if we have less of the things that are telling our thyroid to make hormone, we're going to make less thyroid hormone. So we're going to have lower circulating levels of our T3 and T4, which is going to cause hypothyroid symptoms, right? Am I making sense, Aaron?
Yeah.
Is everybody following? So stress by itself is, because of this mechanism, is going to reduce our active thyroid hormone levels, right? So our thyroid gland, you know, like I said, it produces T3 and T4, right? It produces more T4 than it does T3. And then what happens with the T4 in a normal function, normal functioning person, is we convert the T4 into T3 in peripheral tissues and organs. Mainly in our intestines and in our livers, where the biggest majority of it is gone, and then or is converted. And then the thyroid hormone, the T3, the active form, binds to the receptors on all of our cells to help them function. That's what this stuff does. Now, when we have stress, we cause our body to release these inflammatory cytokines. Like I said, these cytokines are these little proteins that interfere with our hypothalamus and pituitary function, right? So these things, when we have these inflammatory cytokines, we stop the conversion of T4 into T3. So we're stopping converting into our active form of thyroid hormone. Therefore, we have lower circulating levels of thyroid hormone, right? This is a big deal. So how does this manifest itself in the form of symptoms? Remember, people that are complaining of hypothyroidism are complaining of very similar symptoms. Their doctors are looking at them saying, well, you may have hypothyroidism, when they're complaining of being fatigued, if they have weight gain or an inability to lose weight, if someone is having mood swings, if they're having anxiety or depression, if they're having brain fog, if they're unable to concentrate, they're not able to remember things and their memory is going bad, they're starting to get constipated, they've got cold hands and feet or an intolerance to cold, if they're losing hair, if their skin is becoming dry and cracked, or if their neck is swelling and their voice has become more hoarse. Those are our big symptoms of hypothyroidism. And like we've said on our thyroid shows, I mean, it's estimated that 20 million Americans have some form of thyroid disease, right? I think it's much higher than that. Right. I think there are a lot of people that are undiagnosed that are walking around. They just don't know that yet. They just haven't been.
Right, and you're not going to have all of those symptoms, too.
No.
I mean, like.
No,
you,
not at all.
I don't know that anybody has all of the symptoms. So.
No, if you've got all those symptoms, that's a trifecta. You have a lot more going on than just thyroid problems.
I just didn't want people to listen to that list and think, oh, well, you know, I don't have all of that.
It's literally any one of those problems.
Yes, then you need to be checked out.
You need to be investigated further because, you know, just like, you know, nothing affects the same every person the same way. We have so many things, our environment, our genetic makeup, what we eat, all of that stuff plays a role on what symptoms are going to manifest in us. And so that's a big deal. Now, taking this a step further with the thyroid function, we've talked also on this show before, we've talked about how it's estimated that 90% of people that actually have hypothyroidism have autoimmune hypothyroidism, which takes us to our next little point, that stress promotes thyroid autoimmunity, right? So years ago, at least 50 years ago, a guy by the name of Hans Selye, he was an endocrinologist, and he was the guy that talked about chronic stress being a problem, right? He basically spent his entire career studying the stress response. And anybody that's had any kind of physiology or even biochemistry, some biochemistry classes teach it, they talk about the adaptation response of Hans Selye, and it's the stress response and what happens to the body when we do that. So we now understand, then we didn't get it as well, but now we understand that when we have a stress-induced HPA axis dysfunction, that changes certain hormones in our body that regulate our immune system. So these hormones, they alter our body's cytokine production, which is these chemicals that help our cells communicate, which in turn triggers immune dysregulation and therefore autoimmune disease. It's a very slippery slope in how this stuff works. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have come into the clinic and they have no idea that they have autoimmunity whatsoever. And we've run some simple testing on them and we find that they have raging autoimmunity. I mean, once we find it, then we start looking for other, you know, why do you have autoimmunity? I mean, I'm thinking of one gentleman in particular in our clinic. I mean, bless his heart, he takes the cake on autoimmunity. We tend to think of autoimmunity affecting women more than men. Our worst autoimmune case is actually a male. It's crazy. There's some testing that we ran that looks at I think it's 20 different autoimmune conditions that can be had that we can test easily and identify. And he's positive for like 15 of them. I mean, it's just crazy. Normally we get maybe 3 or 4, sometimes 5, 15. I mean, it's just...
And the reason that there are, well, I mean, 15 is excessive, obviously, but the reason that a lot of times we see 3 to 5 is because autoimmunity breeds autoimmunity.
Right. And I will tell you, this guy is probably under the most stress of anybody that we have in our office. I mean, it's just massive amounts of stress from it's mainly job stress, but still, he is proof positive that stress promotes autoimmunity. It just does. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about how stress promotes autoimmunity and how stress then causes some resistance in our body. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, today we're talking about how stress can cause symptoms of hypothyroidism. And we spent most all the first segment really getting into some science-y stuff, really explaining how this stuff functions, like how stress promotes thyroid autoimmunity. I went through that pretty in depth, and we're going through that and finishing that up. The big thing with this is there's actually research out there that's showing a direct relationship between stress and autoimmune hypothyroidism. Right. It's starting to develop. It's there. We have direct links between stress and Graves' disease, as well as stress and rheumatoid arthritis. Well, I've talked on this show before. Autoimmunity is autoimmunity. It doesn't matter if you have Graves' disease or if you have autoimmune hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, or if you have rheumatoid arthritis or scleroderma or mixed connective tissue disease. It doesn't matter. The mechanism that this stuff is happening is all the same. The tissue, the end tissue that's being attacked is what's different. These conditions are named by the end tissue that's being attacked, not by the mechanism that takes place. There's only so many ways that our body can respond to things. And we only have so many tissues that we can attack. And so that's how these things are named. So don't be confused that if you have rheumatoid arthritis, that your treatment is really any different from a natural perspective in balancing the human body than someone that has Hashimoto's.
Well, and I think that's an important point, though, that it's from the natural perspective when you're actually trying to fix it. From the functional medicine perspective on this, it's different. From the medical perspective, if you're going to get a medication, it is different, right?
Right. Right, exactly, because they have a medication that's approved to treat this thing, but it's not approved to treat something else. But they're starting to, because we're starting to see medications being prescribed off-label,
yes,
especially the biologic medications like your Humiras and things like that. They're starting to prescribe them not for rheumatoid arthritis. They're starting to prescribe them for other autoimmunity, and they're starting to catch on.
Yes.
And you actually see commercials for some of these medications for other things than what they were originally for. Well, of course, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that autoimmunity is autoimmunity. It's just what tissue is it attacking today, right? And if you have one autoimmune condition, more than likely you have more than one. The most common number to have is 3, but we see people with as many as, like I said before, 15. Right. And there's over 150 that that are out there. We can't test for all 150. We know that they exist, but to be able to test them all individually, we can't do. We just know that it's an autoimmune process. So that's one of the big things that matters. Now, then taking that a step further with the thyroid and stress, I mean, stress causes thyroid hormone resistance, right? So even if we were making the hormone, we become resistant to it. So the receptors control the process of transcription, right? So that's when we transcribe, that's how we express our genes. That's the first step of gene expression, right? Which is when our DNA is copied to make RNA. And then we make this stuff again, and that's how we replicate our own DNA, right? Now, I'm not going to get into all that process. But the thyroid receptors, you know, their role in gene expression means that they have effects on all cells of the human body, every single one of them. And when we have inflammatory cytokines that are made when we're under chronic stress, we suppress the sensitivity of our receptors to thyroid hormones, meaning we're not likely to get the key in the lock, right? It's like somebody covered up the lock and we can't put the key in the lock anymore. We're resistant to the key that goes in and unlocks that cell and helps it function and have the genetic portion of our cells replicating and working the way that we're supposed to. So when that happens, we impair all functions of the cells of our body, not just, oh, we're affecting what's going on with thyroid, which is how you end up with these generalized symptoms that people get. Fatigue. People are just tired because their cells not able to make energy the way it's supposed to. They gain weight because our cells not able to burn energy the way it's supposed to. We have mood swings, anxiety, depression, brain fog, poor concentration, poor memory, constipation, cold hands and feet because we're not able to generate the energy to create the warmth that our body is supposed to have. So we get cold all the time. We lose our hair. I mean, this is why this stuff happens. It's just a big domino effect, right? And then, like we've said on this show before, all hormones are a spider's web of the body. You can't affect one hormone without affecting all other hormones, right? Just like you can't touch one edge of the spider's web and not vibrate the entire spider's web, right? So stress will cause an imbalance in all of our other hormones, right? It alters, you know, it has an influence on thyroid function, but indirectly, we're going to affect things like estrogen levels. We're going to affect things like testosterone levels. People that are super stressed have low levels of testosterone, period, cut and dried, right? We see it all the time. We see these business executives, these men that come in their 50s with testosterone levels of 100. We talked about this on our hormone show.
People don't know that what 100 means.
You need to have a testosterone level of much higher than 100, like 900 or even a little more, right? That's where optimal levels of thyroid hormone are for men. Now, women, that's not quite that high, but women need to have elevated levels of testosterone as well. That's what helps us heal and repair. That's our healing and repair hormone, right? So we're suppressing all of this stuff, right? So when we have massive amounts of stress, we will start pumping out things like cortisol, our stress hormone. And we know the effects that cortisol has, right? Everybody's familiar with cortisol. We increase abdominal body fat when we increase our levels of cortisol. We change all kinds of things when that happens. When cortisol levels are up, our liver is not able to process estrogen the way it's supposed to. So we'll have, you know, estrogen excess, and we'll have signs and symptoms of estrogen dominance in ourselves, but whether male or female, right? This stuff happens. I mean, we see guys that come in with elevated levels of estrogen because they're and suboptimal levels of testosterone because they're under massive amounts of stress. We'll see their blood work and be like, okay, you didn't let on that you were under this much stress in our initial talk, because guys tend to underinflate their, you know, stressors because they want to think that they're big and bad and tough and they can handle all this stress. But the chemistry of the body doesn't lie. When we see your estrogen levels out of medical range, we know you're under stress. We've got things going on. We've got to investigate further and figure out what's actually going on here, right? But this sort of stuff happens. And so all of these things show, all of these things together, what we've just been talking about, are the mechanisms that tell us that chronic stress causes hypothyroidism without without causing any without having any problem in the thyroid gland itself. It's still doing what it's told. It's still making thyroid hormone at the level that it's been told to make it by the TSH and the TRH, right? And it pumps it out there. It's our body's inability to convert the stuff due to other hormone imbalances that happen by this increased inflammatory cytokine and this increased stress response that changes our function of this and gives us these hypothyroid symptoms, tiredness, weight gain, you know, et cetera, right? So how do we reduce our stress to be able to improve our thyroid function? I mean, for the most part, if we just say go home and you know, decrease your stress, that's like telling you to go home and get taller. You know, there's nobody knows how to do that. And we're, as a society, we're not very good at handling or managing stress. There's no time for that. That's what I hear. I don't have time to do yoga. I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time to do something else. I'm like, well, you're going to have plenty of time when you're dead, because if you don't change things, you're going to have some serious health issues and you're not going to be able to do anything. So you're going to have lots of time to rest. The problem is the window of opportunity to heal yourself is going to have passed. And so there's not much that anyone's going to be able to do for you. That tends to get some people's attention, right? So how do we manage our stress? You know, sometimes our stress in our body is not just the stress that we feel that we have to wake up early in the morning, we have to get our kids ready for school, then we got to get them off to school, and then we've got to get to work, and then we've got to get off of work in time to drive home and pick them up, and then we've got to take them to their extracurricular activities, and then we got to get them home, and we got to make sure they get their homework done, and we have to make sure that they're fed and bathed and into bed to do it all over again. I'm not talking about that necessarily perceived stress. I'm talking about the stress of having imbalanced blood sugar. I'm talking about the stress of having an unhealthy gut. I'm talking about the stress of food intolerances and eating things on a constant basis that your body is sensitive to. I'm talking about chronic infections that you didn't even know were there. I'm talking about environmental toxins that you didn't know were present. These are the types of things that I'm referring to here as, you know, stressors that you can reduce. Figuring out what's actually stressing your body, because maybe your perception of stress will change and your ability to handle quote unquote daily activity stressors, what I just mentioned with the kids and the extracurriculars and stuff, maybe that stuff will become easier for you to do if you figure out what these underlying stressors are that you don't even know are going on, like the environmental toxins or the imbalanced blood sugar. All of these things matter, right? This is one of the key pieces to this puzzle, is identifying the stressors that we don't see, right? Everybody has stressors. Everybody's busy. I completely understand that. But not everybody is allowing the underlying stressors. They're working on those things. They're working on the blood sugar imbalances, right? That's one of the biggest and one of the first things that we identify in people is, do we have a blood sugar imbalance? Do we have something going on that we're not able to process our sugars, and our blood sugar is too high at certain times during the day? It's too low. We're, you know, what are we eating that's driving our blood sugar up and or down, right? All of this stuff matters because it affects our insulin level, which is a hormone, which affects, like I said, one hormone affects all other hormones, right? So we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into some very particular ways that you can decrease your stress levels to allow you to be a healthier individual and to get rid of these hypothyroid symptoms. You're listening to Wellness 101.
You're listening to Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Or by phone, 314-293-8123.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. If you're just tuning in today, we're talking about how stress can cause hypothyroid symptoms. And the first couple of segments, I spent a lot of time going through the science of that. And, you know, I apologize, but sorry, not sorry, kind of, about some of this, because for those of you that are out there suffering, hopefully that explains what's truly going on with you, right? What's going on chemically inside of you that is causing all of this stuff to take place? that type of stuff is what we get our most comments on, and our most, hey, thank you. Now I understand. I need some help. Can you help me? Kind of stuff. So there you go. There's the science. Now let's get into things that you can do to reduce your stress and improve your thyroid function. And again, this is not your day-to-day stress. I'm talking about the stuff that you don't necessarily see or feel. And the first one, just like I was talking about right before the break, is balancing blood sugar. That's one of the first things we look at is what's your blood sugar? What's your insulin levels? How's your response to blood sugar? What's going on with you? Because when blood sugar is off, we have a huge HPA axis disruption, right? I mean, diabetes has been shown over and over again to impair HPA axis response to blood sugar levels. So insulin treatments help reduce blood sugar and normalize it. I completely get that. But there are other things that can be done to help improve this rather than having to jump right to a hormone, because we're giving a hormone to try to fix other hormones. It creates a whole cascade of other issues.
And when we talk about balancing blood sugar, these aren't just for people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic.
No.
It's for, and a lot of people out there, because we talk to people all the time who are aware that they have some sort of blood sugar handling problem, right? Mm-hmm. They have symptoms. They get shaky if they don't eat, or after certain meals,
they get a headache if they don't eat.
Right. They have certain issues that come up if they're not eating regularly or depending on the food that they eat. So it's important to kind of know where you're at on that, because it's not just, let's try to avoid, getting a diabetes or pre-diabetes diagnosis, but you don't need to get to that, you don't have to get that far to be having problems where it's going to affect you.
Right. Another stress that can be worked on is healing your gut. We talk a lot on this show about gut and gut health. Dysbiosis or gut dysbiosis is a big physical stressor, right? It takes a huge toll on our HPA axis and thyroid function. There's research out there on germ-free mice. So these mice don't have gut microbiome. They just don't have the microbiota. And they figured out through research that these germ-free mice have increased HPA axis activity. So basically that tells us that abnormal gut flora activates the body's stress response. This is another thing that we look at relatively quickly is what's going on with your digestive function. Because if you're perceiving lots and lots of stress, or if you're not, or if you're having all of these symptoms, how balanced is your gut bacteria? I mean, there are actually gut-brain neural pathways. We know that there is a connection between the gut and the brain. And then we talked earlier in the show about these inflammatory cytokines, these chemicals that communicate from cell to cell. And when we have elevated levels of those, we have this stuff called lipopolysaccharides, which is a substance that's in our gut that creates lots of damage. That is our big characteristic of gut dysbiosis. This activates our HPA axis and raises our cortisol levels, right? And then there's a lot of studies out there that link gut dysbiosis to autoimmune hypothyroidism. I mean, this is autoimmunity. When you have autoimmunity, you basically can say you have a gut dysfunction, period, cut and dried, right? So how do we correct the gut dysbiosis? When we identify things, we'll look at like a stool analysis for people, and we will actually see that they have no growth. They take the sample and they put it in a petri dish, and they see how the bacteria species grow. And they'll actually see no growth in entire species of bacteria that are supposed to be in the gut, meaning that the bacteria aren't even there. So we have people that have all kinds of issues that come in, and we go back and we like, look, you're missing two or three or four entire species of gut flora. That just opens the door for all kinds of other dysbiosis and opportunistic bugs to take over and grow out of control.
Right. We have talked about before, and I think it was in our, we recently did a show on the microbiome, but yep. really it's about balancing the bacteria that's in there. It's not, you know, because people talk a lot about, you know, reducing certain bacteria or, and it's all about the balance. Yeah, you don't want the bad bacteria to get too high, but you also need to make sure that you've got a sufficient number of the good bacteria in there.
Right.
So it's about the relationship between the two and keeping it in balance.
Yeah. Another one we talk about this a ton on the show is identifying your food sensitivities. Anything that triggers inflammation in the gut is your body sees that as a physical stressor. And if you don't know that you're sensitive to broccoli and you eat broccoli 5 times a week, you're creating a problem for yourself. If you're sensitive to broccoli, the worst thing you can do is continue to eat broccoli because your body thinks it's a massive stressor because it's trying. You have to create an inflammatory response every time you consume it. So identifying those food sensitivities and removing those things that you're sensitive to are extremely important to help us, right? Things like non-gluten or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, this stuff happens, right? You may be sensitive to gluten and not have celiac disease. That happens. It's going to affect your level of stress. If you're dealing with a chronic infection, things like Epstein-Barr or Lyme disease, this stuff is out there. Chronic jaw infections. I can't tell you how many people we find that have an old root canal, and when we send them to a proper dentist to identify things, they actually find hidden infections in the person's jaw that are creating all these health issues. Get that taken care of, get that infection out of there, right? And all of a sudden they make massive strides in their health. And it's because they had this hidden chronic infection in their body. Another one is environmental toxins. So this is something that I pay special attention to because one thing that we've done in this country that just completely baffles me is we know the dangers of bisphenol A or BPA, right? We know the dangers so much that we removed BPA from all plastic products that are for babies. So, you know, we have a little one and everything says BPA free on it. All of it, the breast milk storage bags, pacifiers, bottles, everything that they have says BPA free on it. But yet stuff for adults still has BPA in it. We're not producing BPA free products for adults. It just boggles
some,
my mind.
But there are just you have
there are
to
a few.
You have to be careful really watching because in general it hasn't been taken out.
Right. Your average plastic water bottle has BPA in it. You know, your average plastic Ziploc bag has BPA in it, right? All of this stuff is full of BPA. I mean, that's just one environmental toxin, not to mention all the other environmental toxins from, you know, air pollutants that are, you know, from our factories and stuff. Now, you know, you have your EPAs and things like that that are out there trying to do their best to clean stuff up. But, you know, there's so many things. Water, I mean, the chemicals that are in our water are not good for us, right? There's positively tested levels of various medications in municipal water supplies. We shouldn't be drinking that stuff. We shouldn't be cooking with that stuff. We shouldn't be consuming it in any way. And, you know, changing how we store our food is another one. Change to like stainless steel or glass to get rid of some of these environmental toxins will significantly reduce your body's perceived level of stress for the better, right? That's something that is extremely important. Next on the list is sleep cycle. We are sleep deprived as a country. So many people don't get adequate levels of sleep that it's not even funny. I mean, every person that goes in our office that has said, I had a sleep study done, I just stop them right there. I'm like, they told you had sleep apnea, didn't they? I haven't had a single person that's been in the office that I can remember that has had a sleep study and they didn't tell them that they had some form of sleep apnea. That tells me something. We are not a country of good quality sleepers, right? It just doesn't happen. Our circadian rhythm gets out of balance. Once our circadian rhythm gets out of balance, all of our biochemical processes happen. I mean, we're supposed to get tired when the sun goes down. We're supposed to sleep at night. And then we have, you know, some of our workers, and God bless them, our third shift workers that are up all night. Of course this creates a circadian rhythm problem. Of course this creates a stress on them because they're awake when they should be asleep and they're sleeping during the day when they should be awake. This stuff has an impact on our health long term, right? All right. We've got to take another break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about sleep, and then we're going to finish up with a few more things that you can do to decrease your stress level. You're listening to Wellness 101.
You're listening to Wellness 101, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.
And welcome back, everyone. Oh, I timed that just right with the words. That's kind of funny. It threw me off there. I heard him in my headphones. I'm like, well, I don't think I was in tune with him, though. Unfortunately, I can't sing, ladies and gentlemen. I can't sing. I can barely talk, so there's no way I can sing. All right. So before the break, we were talking about how sleep can have an effect on your stress levels, and we were talking about, you know, making sure your circadian rhythm is right. Go to bed at the same time every night. Wake up at the same time every day, even on the weekends. Yes, it's important to do that. That can help us improve our sleep. It's an important thing. And taking sleep seriously. The quality of your sleep is just as important. So making sure you have a good mattress, making sure you have a good pillow, making sure you have the temperature in your room that you're sleeping in cool enough, making sure that you have a humidifier to make sure that you have adequate levels of humidity in the air. All of these things play a role. Getting all the light out of your room, making that room as dark as you possibly can, right? All these electronics that we have in our bedrooms now, we have TVs and cable boxes and, you know, digital alarm clocks are all emitting all of this light that is impairing our body's ability to sleep and sleep well. You know, if you get into a completely dark, pitch black, you know, can't see anything in front of you environment, you're going to sleep better. So that's another big one too. Next on the list would be to help your stress is make sure we're exercising. Now, exercise has so many health benefits. It's so well documented how much it can reduce your stress, but we don't want to overexercise, right? Now, you know, I know that you guys out there that are triathlon runners or marathon runners and triathletes, you're going to be like, well, that's not me. I'm not the, yes, you are. You're the ones that are overtraining. You're the ones that I'm talking about that are exercising too much, right? I completely get it if you want to accomplish that, but
But it's not good long term.
It's not good long term. We have lots of people that I know tons of athletes that did way too many of those, you know, way too quickly and created long term health effects from it. Their joints hurt constantly.
A couple of things. Sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely is there is a possibility of exercising too much. Those of them who do it successfully come to us and help, you know, we will help you along the way.
Right.
Again, it's never going to be a good thing to do this routinely. It's just not. It's too much on your body. But not only can we help improve in performance, but we can help decrease the problems in your body.
Improving performance is easy.
Right.
that's the easiest part.
Right. But also, helping with recovery and just, helping the body recover, long term also, so that you're able to not see those effects from because it takes a lot to train for a triathlon.
Right. So another thing that can be done to help with stress is trying adaptogenic herbs. A lot of people are familiar with adaptogenic herbs. These are adaptogens are herbs that help our bodies deal with stress. They increase this stuff called neuropeptide Y, which is a stress response hormone. It basically stops the HPA axis from overreacting is how it works. So adaptogen herbs, there's a couple big ones that are out there. Ashwagandha is one. It's very popular. It has a very long history of use. That's not my favorite. If I'm giving someone an adaptogenic herb, I actually prefer rhodiola. It's an herb. I think it's native to Siberia, but it also increases neuropeptide Y, and I just like it better. I seem to find in our patients, those that are taking rhodiola have a little bit better stress response quicker than people that are taking ashwagandha. Some people are really sensitive to ashwagandha, and I'm not 100% sure why. And maybe that's just my patient population. I know other doctors out there that use ashwagandha like it's going out of style, and they have great success with it. I just find that we have better success with rhodiola. You can give a much smaller dose, and it tends to have a better effect for us. And again, I'm not a huge herb fan. You've heard me say this on this show before. It's not what I like to do. I think there are too many interactions between herbs and other herbs and herbs and medications that they become problematic. But I know some people just absolutely love them. So those are two, if you've heard of adaptogens, those are two that are big adaptogenic herbs. And then this is one that I utilize. This next one on the list here is think about your stressful experiences differently. Reframing is a concept of where you just change how you're thinking about a particular stressful experience. Like we may have at the clinic, I may have, you know, 5 patient visits right in a row. And rather than think about the stress of going from one person to the next person, to the next person, to the next person, making sure that we give them quality care and quality time and talk to about them all their about all their issues and stay on time so we respect everyone's time in that, you know, in their visit, I reframe that and think, you know, I thank God how blessed I am that I'm able to help these people. And that what we have is helping them, and they're continuing to come see us. That's a whole different perspective.
Yeah, and we talk about that a lot about because you know it was really hard at the beginning. We have amazing people that work in the clinic, but there's just so much that goes on, and we talk a lot about this with everyone who works in the clinic. Is the fact that like everyone is there, like everyone who works in our clinic is there because they want to help people. So when we have crazy days, we're getting exactly what we wanted.
That's right?
That's right. I mean, and those simple changes in your perspective can make a big difference. You know, it's the same thing when, you know, we've both had really long days and we come home and, you know, we've got an 11-month-old to take care of. Well, that's exactly what we've always wanted, right? You know what I mean? Like, you can't...
He's a rotten booger, don't get me wrong.
He's a great kid. But he is a very energetic kid. And, you know, I mean, like, what a blessing that is. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. Also, when you're going through difficult things, no interesting person has had a really easy life. You become a much more interesting person when you've had to overcome things. So it's good to give yourself these... you know, when you have these obstacles, to show yourself that you're able to work through them.
They're not doing stories on the news or specials on people that did not overcome adversity. They're not, you know, doing specials on someone who made every decision in their life right and they, you know, became a multi-trillionaire. We're talking about they're doing stories on the people that went through, they suffered, they went through things, they had to deal with stress and they overcame things. Every one of them have very similar stories. They overcame adversity to succeed. We'll end on that one. Plus, we're out of time. If you have questions, comments, concerns, feel free to email us. Visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We're happy to hear from you. For Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.
Wellness 101 has been brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your destination for functional medicine in St. Louis. For more information, visit them online at theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com or by phone 314-293-8123.